This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Bing West, a Marine combat veteran, former Assistant Secretary of Defense for President Reagan. He's also the author of three books on the Iraq War, the latest of which, The Strongest Tribe, is now available in paperback. And he's visited the Afghanistan War Theater several times and actually just returned a couple of days ago. We want to get his thoughts on what he's seeing in that theater and how the different political issues are impacting our efforts there. And Bing, it's always great to have you with us.
Well, thank you.
Where were you with our troops and what did you see?
Well, I was in Helmand Province with the Marines down south, and then I was in a province called Konar, which is in the northeast. It's near the famous passes going into Pakistan along the border with Pakistan. And what did I see? Well, in Helmand, which is the opium/poppy kingdom of the world, things have been turned topsy-turvy. I mean, this is my second or third trip down there, and I couldn't believe it. The Marines have the whole place in lockdown. It's a different Helmand where they are, and it shows that what General McChrystal is doing with his strategy of counterinsurgency can work. Up north along the Pakistan border, the Taliban, and they're a collection of many different groups. They're not just one Taliban, but the Taliban with a small t, the enemy, has so many sanctuaries and so many valleys in the mountains that they're operating under out from, that it's a tough fight, and it's a different fight than in Helmand. So you have two different fights now going on, down in the south and up in the northeast.
Well, let's talk about each quickly. What has enabled the Marines to be so successful in a relatively short period of time? They've clearly taken some difficult casualties, but as you mentioned, they've got the place locked down. How have they been able to do that?
Basically because of, I'm just going to say it, it's not because of the generals. The generals can only set the table. That doesn't mean that I don't admire our generals, but this isn't a war for generals. The generals are not maneuvering divisions on the battlefield. The reason for the success down south is due to the 20 and 21 and 22-year-old young men that have volunteered to fight for the rest of us, because they're going out in squads, 13 Marines at a time, many times without their armor on, twice a day in heat that gets up to 115 degrees, and now it's getting into the cold part of the year. But can you imagine that? I mean, every single day, a dozen of them take their rifles and walk out the gate two times a day for about a six-hour patrol each, day after day after day, and they're living with nothing. I mean, they have meals ready to eat, which is plastic food, and then they lie down at night in their sleeping bags in the dust, and that is it. They have no water for showers, no real latrines. They have nothing except when they keep getting out there and out there and out there. The Taliban have just said, I'm not going to take on these guys. They just keep coming at me. And that's what's happened down in the south. It's just absolute persistence at the small unit level.
And can that translate to those other areas in the north that you said were so different? Will another 40 or 60,000 troops be able to go into all those different valleys and areas you mentioned and essentially have the same effect?
I don't think so. We're going to have to settle for half a loaf or three-quarters of a loaf. Up in the north, the mountains are staggering in their height, and when you start walking at about 4,000, 5,000 feet, and there the enemy gets up above you at about 8,000 feet and shoots at you from about 600 yards away, and it'll take you 2 hours to get up there to where he was. It's absolutely exhausting, and the Taliban are like mountain goats. Actually, they're like Apaches, and they can scoot very, very quickly. So when you get up into those mountains, it's a different kind of fight. However, you're dealing with isolated tribes up there. It's not where the real population is. So you could see us gradually have much better control and relations with the population in the large populated valleys and still not have control of the mountains.
Is it possible to isolate them and make them irrelevant?
Only one way I can see that happening. I can see irrelevancy where they just fade away and they become bandits. You know, let them live in the first century and hope for their caliphate on a mountaintop somewhere. That irrelevancy could come about only, in my judgment, if their morale somehow is broken. And I'm not sure how that happens. And what bothers me the most about the border is we don't control it, and the Pakistanis are scared to death of it. So it's like we've chased the Apaches down into the Sierra Nevada, but that's a big mountain range, and they can stay there for a long, long time.
Bing, I don't know how much time you might have had around the Afghan population. What's their sense of their political situation, as well as where the security momentum is heading right now?
The politics are very simple. I mean, we imposed a wacky kind of democracy on tribes who don't get it, but they do get that they want their man as the president. So if you go to the Pashtun areas, and the Pashtuns are the ones causing the trouble, and they're a slight majority, they may be 55-60% of the entire population, they say, we want Karzai. Well, why do you want him? Because he's Pashtun. No other reason. Then you go to the northern area where you have the Tajiks, et cetera, and they say, we want Abdullah. Well, why? Well, he really is more one of us, and we think he's much more honest than Karzai. So I think, and they don't particularly care. The fact that the election was stolen, as it was, and had to be thrown out, they shrug their shoulders at that. They say, Karzai's still our guy. So their view of politics is quite different than ours, and I expect that Karzai probably genuinely does have a majority in the country. Not a huge majority, but I expect he has a majority. The biggest problem with Karzai is, when is he going to start standing up to people? He's not a tough guy, and he's not a great leader in a country that needs a tough, great leader.
And so you do expect him, though, to win the runoff?
Probably. I'd have to say, a betting man, if you went to Las Vegas and looked at the odds, yeah, you know, just like you'd have to say Obama was definitely ahead of McCain in our election. You'd have to give the edge here distinctly to Karzai.
Back to our troops now, Bing. There's a lot of discussion, especially here in Washington, but also around the country, about the impact on our troops, their morale, and what they're feeling as the president takes his time to decide exactly what this policy ought to be in Afghanistan moving forward, possibly waiting till after we know who wins this runoff. Are you hearing a lot of angst among the troops about what that decision is going to be?
I see something that's a little bit different, that's even more disturbing. I have been standing there, you know, I go out on the patrols with them and that sort of thing, and just sort of stand in the background. And our generals always visit our troops. And when our generals are talking to our troops now, they're saying, ignore what you're hearing from Washington and focus on your mission. Wow. I mean, that's scary, because you know what that's sort of saying? That's sort of saying, guys, we can only count on each other. We can't count on Washington. Holy smokes. You know, I wish there was some way I could say to the president and others, sir, it's time to fish or cut bait. You just cannot go on sort of publicly saying, oh, I'm agonizing over this thing. You're not Hamlet, in all due respect. You're the commander-in-chief, and this doing nothing is scary, because there our troops are in places like Helmand, and they're making progress. And they're uncertain about their own leadership and their own commander-in-chief. You can't have that. You just can't have that. The president must come out as the commander-in-chief.
And if you were advising him, sir, would you advise him to go along basically with the McChrystal plan, or would there be some other ideas you would offer?
I would say, Mr. President, I think you really should surprise the world and quietly, secretly fly out and tell General McChrystal you want to go down and take a look at this, the middle of Helmand province where the Marines are, and then take off your flak jacket and helmet and walk down the street. And wow, what an effect that would have. I mean, McChrystal knows what he's doing. Our troops know what they're doing. So I wouldn't change it. I'd reinforce it.
Bing, fascinating to get your firsthand account of what has changed there, most of it in a very good way. And
I'd be more careful with that one. You know, good in the South, problematic in the North because of the border.
Certainly true. And, sir, we thank you very much, as always, for your time.
My pleasure.
Bing West, former Assistant Secretary of Defense for President Reagan, Marine combat veteran, author of 3 books on the Iraq War, the latest of which, The Strongest Tribe, is now available in paperback. And, of course, he's just returned from his latest visit with our troops in Afghanistan. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.